Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Common Sense with Dr. Ben Carson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Common Sense with Dr. Ben Carson. You know, standing for what you believe in sometimes leaves you standing alone. And there are a lot of people who just won't stand for what they believe in. They'd much rather stand in the corner with their head down and hope no one calls them a nasty name. But is that really the best way to lead life? And, you know, I've certainly been there and had people attacking me and calling me race traitor and all kinds of horrible things. But, you know, what I've found is when you put your trust in God, you really don't have to worry so much about those people. You just have to one person you have to please, and it makes life so much easier. Well, everyone, welcome to Common Sense. And I'm here today with a very special guest, Jonathan Isaac. Those of you who are NBA basketball fans already know who he is. But for those of you who may not know too much about basketball, he's a professional basketball player with the Orlando Magic. He was their first round NBA draft pick in 2017, sixth overall. He's a Christian conservative. Get this, an ordained minister. He's only 25 years old. And has preached at Jump Ministries Global Church in Orlando. At the height of the George Floyd riots, when virtually every team had Black Lives Matter printed across their courts, on their jerseys, on their shirts, on their suits, Jonathan was the sole player to stand up for his beliefs. And he stood during the national anthem when everybody else disrespected it. And he would do other things in life. For instance, he made a personal decision to decline the coronavirus vaccine. Now, I believe he was had already had the disease, but we'll talk about that momentarily. But he's also, get this, a best-selling author. His book, Why I Stand, is an intensely personal account of his journey to actually finding Christ in his life and how his life was transformed from a life of insecurity and fear to one of confidence and purpose. So welcome, Jonathan. We're absolutely delighted to have you. And would like you to start by just discuss a little bit about your decision to stand for the national anthem on July the 31st, 2020, in a game against the Brooklyn Nets. and not to wear a Black Lives Matter shirt.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the intro, and you're too kind. But on that day, and I talk about it a lot in the book, is that so many events in my life had led up to not standing, not kneeling in the bubble. Me finding Christ, like you said, the journey of becoming a young man and finding my purpose and my identity in Christ, and not allowing fear and anxiety that had plagued me so much as in my youth and in my young adulthood to get the best of me in this moment as well. But I would say the crux of it was that I just didn't agree. Although I believe that Black Lives Matter, I didn't see the Black Lives Matter movement and organization as something that I could bear witness with my Christian sentiments. I didn't agree with their tone, with their rhetoric. And again, although I believe the phrase, I just dug a little deeper and said, you know what, this isn't something that I want to align myself with. And the more that I decided to go down that road, the more and more apparent to me that it was bigger than just Black Lives Mattering. This was a political move. It was a social move that was bigger than the saying. And so I decided not to. And I just said, you know, and I detail all through the book about the conversations that I had with my pastor and my fiance at the time, and even, you know, conversations with the team. We had a conversation early, I think the day before I decided not to stand, with the team and the presidents brought everybody together, and they said, you know, you guys make the decision for yourself. So they all leave the room and it's just the players now. And everybody's like, we don't have a choice here. You know, everybody's going to kneel. It is what it is. A team had already kneeled before us, and they were like, we don't have a choice. And one of my teammates turned towards me and said, well, Jonathan, what are you going to do? And I said, fellas, I'm not kneeling and I'm not putting that t-shirt on. And, you know, chaos erupted and everybody had, you know, to say what they had to say. But it came down to, I respect the decisions that you guys made in kneeling. And I asked for that same respect in return. I see the problem that you see, but I just have a different solution. And I see it as that every person has fallen short of the glory of God. And if any of us are going to point fingers, we're pointing fingers from a glass house and throwing stones from a glass house.
That is quite a perspective for a young man to have, and an incredible amount of courage. Well, what was your impression of the George Floyd incident?
In terms of the police officer and just the incident itself?
Yes.
Well, I think my very direct, you know, momentary of watching it, I was upset, you know, angry like everybody else that this was a terrible tragedy and just a terrible thing for an officer to do. And so I wasn't necessarily of the camp of people dissecting, you know, what was George Floyd on and what was the officer's knee in the right place or all that stuff. I just said, you know what, this looks like a situation that is bad on the police officer, and I'm okay with saying that. And so I did feel that I was wrong for Derek Chauvin to have his knee on, George Floyd for that long. And that's kind of what I wrote with.
Yeah, it was really quite interesting because it was played 24/7.
Right.
Incessantly. And we have some friends in Australia, and we talked to them, and they said, what's happening in America? The police are killing all the Black men. you would think that just, you know, from the way that it was emphasized. And it was interesting because a bunch of surveys were taken asking people, how many times unarmed Black men are killed by police? And the numbers were astonishing that people came up with, in the hundreds, sometimes 1,000 or more. But that conservative bastion of thought, the Washington Post, actually said it is less than 24 in a year's time, with more than 55 million police civilian encounters. Mm-hmm. So it's actually quite unusual. But whenever it occurs, it's just played up to a point where you would think it was a common occurrence. Now, any death is a tragedy.
Right.
And one of the things that I talk about a lot is, maybe with all the technology we have these days, there are some other things that the police can use. There's something called bolo wrap. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's a gun. You shoot it, and out comes these Kevlar twines, and they wrap you up like a spider web.
Oh, wow.
Almost instantly. So, you know, in the case of the young man in Atlanta who was sleeping, got out of the car, and ended up running away from the police, and they shot him and killed him. Mm-hmm. With a bolo wrap, there's no reason that he would have had to die. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be nice if we spent a little more time talking about what are some of the things we can do to prevent these incidents. Those riots that occurred after that point in time destroyed the livelihood of a lot of people who worked all their lives to create this. How is destroying their livelihood in any way bringing justice to the situation? And I think sometimes people really don't think about that. But did you know at the time that you stood that it would cause so much controversy?
Oh, absolutely. 110%. I had, you know, I'm on Twitter and just kind of, socially aware. So I could see everybody who had said anything, you know, against the Black Lives Matter movement or everything that was going on. You know, people were getting canceled. Just a lot of craziness was going on. So I actually detail in the book that the night before I stood, I was on the phone with my pastor and I was telling him, like, I don't think you understand how crazy this is going to be. Like, I'm going to be a coon. I'm going to be an Uncle Tom. I hadn't signed my NBA contract yet. That was still, you know, up for negotiation the upcoming summer.
Oh, wow.
He said to me, you cannot stand for God and God not stand for you. And that's when I was like, look, you know, obviously we're going for it. But I knew full well that this was going to be something that was going to cause a lot of backlash. You know, people weren't going to be willing to hear me out. There would be a section of people who praised what I did, you know, for their own reasons. And there would be a group of people who, you know, hated what I did for their own reasons.
Well, what was it like in the locker room that after the game?
You know, after the game was fine, I had went straight to do, you know, my interview that viral interview about, you know, me saying why I did what I did. It was the next day we had practice. And we were coming back from practice. We were on the bus headed back to the hotel. And I got a text message to my phone. And it said, players meeting only, you know, when we get back to the hotel. And so we get back to the hotel and one of my teammates bumped me like, hey, you know, this is about you, just giving you a heads up. So we get to the players only meeting. And, you know, there were guys on our team that were extremely impassioned about the Black Lives Matter movement. And they had every right to be. They kind of were full into it. They went to the, all the showings and the, you know, the protests and everything. They went to it all. And so, you know, certain guys were highly upset about, you know, me doing what I did. And they let me have it in terms of, like, you know, me, you know, hijacking the movement and making it about me. But the sentiment from me was the same. Like, look, guys, I see the same thing that you see. I see what happened to George Floyd. I just have a different solution than you. To me, an organization, a president, a political aisle does not change the hearts of men. And that's what truly has to change. And that's why I referenced the gospel being the thing that can truly change the heart of a man. And so that was my solution. And we kind of left it at that.
Well, what about your family and your fiance? How did they respond?
Fiance is ride or die. She's my wife now. She's actually pregnant right now. We're having a little girl coming up here soon.
Oh, congratulations.
But no, she stuck with me. And, you know, I had a phone call with her the same night before I stood, and she said she's standing with me. And so I have a great church family, a great family, you know, first of all, that were all supportive and, you know, were sticking with me.
And, that is so, so important to have that, foundation. And, throughout all the controversies that I've ever had in life, my wife has always been right there, right by my side, probably advocating whatever it is more than I do.
Right. But to that point is because she knows you, right? So somebody who hears your point of view is only going off of your point of view, and they can attach any nefarious, you know, ideal to why you did what you did. But somebody who knows you and your intentions and why you're going about things the way you are can see it from really the true perspective.
Exactly. Now, was your standing for the anthem not only your standing a manifestation of your love for America, but an affirmation that Jesus Christ is the answer for the problems that we face?
Yeah, absolutely. So twofold. I'm not, you know, abashed to say, like, I love America. I love being able to play the game that I love in the place that I play it. And I think about America quite often. Like, my pastor talks about us as humans, and he says, we haven't done everything right, but we haven't done everything wrong either. And that's what I think about America. You talked about, I was listening to something where you were talking about, you know, how it was for you growing up. and the great strides that we've seen, been able to be made, by, our people in America, CEOs and presidents and owners of companies and so many different things that was, could have never been a possibility in the time that you were growing up. And so, I know America's history and it's not a great one, but at the same time, you have to give it to America for making the strides that it has, that's on white and black people alike. And so, so that was a part of it. But then at the same time, like you said, the true crux of it was me saying, I believe that Jesus Christ is the answer for the problems that we see in the world because he's been the answer for me. And so that's what I do throughout the book is detail. How did God take this young kid who struggled immensely with fear and anxiety and self-insecurity and grow him into somebody who'd be willing to stand alone for something that he believes in? And it truly is a testament to the reality of a relationship with Christ.
I think it's a big encouragement for a lot of people. And you're very well spoken. Were you a good student in school?
I would say I was an okay student. I liked science. I liked math. I liked things that were about like retention, like learning, memorizing how to do the problem, memorizing all the scientific facts and all that stuff. I enjoyed that. I wasn't much of a writer, which is interesting. Reader. And that was mainly because of just fear of just like always being afraid of somebody critiquing my writing or not wanting to write in front of other people. And now to actually have written a book and really have found a love for the creativity of words, inside of me that I would never thought was there. In writing the book, I went back and spoke to a couple of my English teachers and they were like, we loved your writing. We always thought you wrote so well. And we wanted to encourage you to write more. And I was like, man, I never would have thought that. And so it's pretty surreal.
That's great. Well, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back in a minute with Jonathan Isaac to talk more about his book, Why I Stand.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And we're back with Jonathan Isaac. He has a new book called Why I Stand. And a question for you, Jonathan. When did real faith come to you? I grew up like you did in a Christian home. And, I could say all the standard Bible verses and stuff like that. But for me, God didn't really become real to me until I was a teenager and I almost stabbed someone. And they had a belt buckle on and a knife blade struck that and broke. But my life would have been very different had it not been for that. And, I came to understand that my angry outbursts were about me because I was selfish. It was always about me, my, and I. And if I could step outside of the circle, I wouldn't be angry anymore. And God brought that to me, and it changed my life completely. When did that change for you come?
Well, it changed for me was when God had it, and I talk about it all throughout the book. It really is a really crazy story. So to go through it all is difficult. But when I got drafted to the NBA, I was living my life. I was doing my thing. I was having fun doing it. I grew up in a Christian household. but it was just traditional for me. It wasn't something that was tangible or real, or I didn't have an in-depth understanding of who God was or that he wanted to have a relationship with me for my betterment. It wasn't just about taking away my fun and not letting me do what all the other kids were doing. It was because he had a plan and purpose for my life. And if I could align myself with him, then I would truly get what I truly want. And so that was brought to me through meeting a pastor who is my pastor today. And I detail the story of us, you know, coming together and meeting in my book. His name is Dr. Hepburn. I met him on an elevator, and I didn't know he was a pastor, and he didn't know I was in the MBA. He said to me on the elevator, "I can tell you how to be great." Now, this is while I'm dealing with all the things that I'm dealing with behind the scenes. I'm still struggling with fear and anxiety, even though I'm an MBA basketball player. I talk about that a lot in the book. I was on anxiety medication while I was at Florida State. I was the number one player in the state of Florida on anxiety medication, and nobody knew. But, you know, one coach, one trainer, my family didn't know, my friends didn't know. But all because I'm struggling with this idea that I have to live up to being the big man on campus and lead this team to greatness. I meet this guy on the elevator, and he says to me, "I can tell you how to be great." And I say, "How?" And he says, "You have to know Jesus." And I'm like, "Man, well, I know Jesus. I know me and Jesus are tight." You know what I'm saying? Everybody's a Christian today. But I didn't know Christ in a way that was tangible. And God had completely flipped my life upside down after that conversation, where he really did just align the pieces and coincidences where I'm saying, "Oh my gosh, God is real." And I began to be discipled by this pastor, Dr. Daron Hepburn, and he started to teach me about the love of God and who God is. And I always tell all the young people that I talk to today, I say, look, God wasn't trying to take something away from me. And that's what everybody thinks. God doesn't want you to have fun. God wants to, you know, make you, square. But God was truly trying to get something to me. And as I began to walk down that road, my eyes are so open to it now that, you know, writing a book, being married, about to have a daughter on the way, would have never been in my plans had God not got control of my life. And now that I see that today, I'm like, man, I wish I did it sooner. And so now I have a tangible, real, you know, daily relationship with Christ that I didn't know really existed.
I suspect your fellow NBA players are probably not all that anxious to hear about God. is it true that there's a lot of avarice, greed, selfishness in professional sports?
I would say yes, and I would say not from the standpoint on, you know, picking on anybody. Is if you have humans anywhere who have the degree of access to excess that we professional players have, the money, the status, the fame, you're gonna find all of these things that come a part of, you know, our human nature, and you see them, you know, more enhanced on a level of when you're able to do what you want to do, get what you want to get, and go where you want to go. And so it is a tough place to try to be, you know, try to walk with Christ, but it is possible. And so I continue to just want to be that light and show that you can, you know, have a relationship with God and be famous and have wealth and all that.
Have some other NBA players reached out to you in a supportive way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like from the time that I stood and then leading on to the vaccine, I've had countless conversations with guys who, you know, have said, you know, they agree with me, you know, Christian players that, you know, I agree with what you did. It was just really tough for me. And I ended up deciding to kneel. Even from other sports, soccer players, football players that I've had conversations with. And then when it comes to the vaccine, I've had, you know, teammates say, man, if they try to do that again, I'm doing what you did. I'm not taking it. So yeah.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about the COVID situation.
Yeah.
You had COVID already, right? I mean, you were infected.
Right. So
you had antibodies.
Exactly. So my placement when it comes to the vaccine, I'm not necessarily from the camp that thinks the vaccine, you know, is like nanobodies that are going to kill you from the inside and the government is, you know, trying to track you. I wasn't really from that camp. I was from the camp that, look, it's a vaccine and vaccines have a job. And I think that it should be everyone's free decision, choice to get this vaccine or not, especially once you look at the nature of COVID, its survival rate, you know, the fact that, you know, people had been infected with it already and have antibodies. I think when you look at the entire overcast of COVID, it should be the easy answer to say, okay, this should be everyone's choice to take this vaccine or not. I can understand if it was, you know, measles or like, you know, just something that's obviously a lot worse. And then you throw in children and all that stuff. So I just thought from the jump, it should have been something that should have been, you know, people's individual choice. And then especially when I looked at myself and said, look, I'm young, I'm healthy, I had COVID already. I don't see the wisdom in putting something into my body where I could have an adverse reaction. Not saying that I would, but I could have, and then still catch the virus afterwards anyway, like so many people did even after they got the vaccine. And so that was pretty much where I was coming from.
Well, basically, you were following the science. We've known for hundreds of years about antibody formation after contact with an antigen, and that it is an extremely effective method of preventing further infection. And you were just following that science. But it's kind of interesting how cancel culture has grown significantly around the COVID issue. Particularly in medical field, and a lot of doctors and nurses lost their positions because of the exact same thing that you just spoke of. They had it already. They knew the impact of antibodies and how that was protective, and they didn't feel a need to take something else that might, in fact, interfere with their immune system. And, you know, you can sort of spread that to almost anything these days. Anything that they don't want you to talk about, it becomes immediately taboo. And if you talk about it or you act on it, you get canceled. And that is actually a very dangerous trend. And it kind of is what precedes totalitarianism. And it's something that I think we all need to be aware of and stop being afraid and be willing to stand up. So the way that you have been able to stand up is a tremendous example, I think, for a lot of people. And you cannot be the land of the free if you're not the home of the brave.
that's a great point. For me, it just, they've made it so difficult to have conversations to where if you hold a certain viewpoint, you're automatically lumped into this tribe of, you know, racist, xenophobic, all these different terms that they, you know, that they have. If you even walk the line of holding a different view, where now it's like, we don't have to hear you out. We don't have to have a conversation with you. You're a COVID, you know, you're a vaccine, you're an anti-vaxxer, COVID denier. There's no need to have a conversation with you. Where what I've been trying to do is give people the courage to just say how they feel. And so when it came to the Black Lives Matter movement, when it came to the vaccine, I just said what I believed and what I thought was on my mind, and I put it out there and allowed people to engage with it in the way that they wanted to. Yes, there were the group that said, you know, he's an anti-vaxxer, don't listen to him. But there were so many people who said, this kid makes sense, and I agree with him. And so, and that gave them courage to go ahead and say what they feel as well. Same thing with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that if we can just somehow get back to having meaningful conversations that were a part of getting us to where we are right now with, you know, within the white and Black community, within all the things that we have going on right now, then we could really see, you know, progress.
Yeah, that's so important. And, you know, do you think a lot of the people that you were having discussions with regarding Black Lives Matter actually knew what they stood for, actually went to their website, saw their Marxist orientation, knew about their thoughts about fatherhood and families? And I wonder if they actually were aware of those things, or were they just going on the basis of the name Black Lives Matter, which sounds good. And I think we all would agree that they do matter. But, you know, when you look underneath and you see some of the other stuff, maybe not.
Right. And even to the point of, you know, some of the things that we've seen come out, you know, later on and around these times about the way that they, you know, managed money and handled it. At the end of the day, we are all human, and then put in a position to have all of that money coming to you, all of that power for the moment. And they didn't handle it correctly. And so that, to me, again, reinforced my own understanding of putting the responsibility and the trust in people in an organization to truly help or truly change things, you know, wasn't truly going to be the answer for the heartfelt problem that is racism and a lot of the other things that we see. So I think that there were a ton of people who kind of just went off of, you know, Black Lives Matter. Of course, Black Lives Matter. And anybody who has anything to say against the phrase Black Lives Matter has to be racist. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're very kind and gracious. I would say. And we'll be right back with our kind and gracious guest in a moment.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, and we're back, Common Sense. And we have as our guest today, Jonathan Isaac, an author of a best-selling book, Why I Stand, forward for the Orlando Magic, a tremendous community activist. You've been involved in so many programs to help youngsters, to help hungry people, to help all kinds of people. Where did that come from?
Honestly, that really comes from our church. So Jump Ministries Global Church that I go to here in Orlando. You know, when I first got plugged in with them and started going there, and again, the pastor that I talked about, Dr. Deron Hepburn, is the lead bishop there. They were already into the community. And so me being able to bring, you know, the resources that I have has been able to kind of explode it and take it to the next level. And so, you know, they feed people, they house people all around the city, you know, men's houses and women's houses. And they just opened up something called Jump In, which is a men's homeless facility that I've spent time at. And, you know, they continue to grow it out and just have place for homeless men to stay and to eat and to, you know, get new clothes. And it's all surrounded around them coming to the services and watching church. And so it really is just something that's great. And I've just tried my best to plug in and just continue to just try to be a blessing.
Well, it's refreshing to see a young man, 25 years old, when other NBA players are trying to say, can I get a Bentley? Can I do this? And you're out there trying to help people. It's very refreshing and encouraging to see that. Now, you talk in your book about the first time you preached. What was that like? How'd that come about?
So the first time I preached, again, probably the most terrifying thing that I've done. And if you had known me, you know, from me being in high school, being in college, you would have never in a million years thought that I would, you know, stand behind a pulpit. I actually had a moment of passing out, talking to kids, while I was at Florida State, of just being so, nervous about it. And so, you know, again, you know, just complete respect and honor to my pastor, who was that person that said, you need, you know, you've been growing, you've been coming to the church for a while. You know, people have heard it a million times from me, but they should hear it from you and what God has done in your life. And I think that you can handle it and on that level. And then he said something to me, I think you should also invite your teammates. And I was like, you're crazy. There's no way in a million. I was drinking with these guys a few months ago. What do you mean? I'm going to go to them and tell them that I'm going to be preaching. But he said to me, he said, only give me your answer after you really pray about it. And so I went and I prayed about it. And of course, you know, I should do it. And so I did end up speaking. I did invite my teammates. And you know, all in all, it went well. I was happy, that I had, you know, faced that fear and overcome that hurdle. And again, that was when I talk about all these little moments that led up to being able to stand in the bubble, that was definitely one of them.
How do you think your return to faith prepared you for that moment when you decided to stand?
Well, it was everything, because I was, you said it early on that, you know, it's about the audience of one. And when you truly have your trust in God, nothing else matters. And that's really what it came down to be. It's like, God, I feel like this is something that you're calling me to do. I know that people aren't going to agree with it, but my conviction is to do what you want me to do. And I'm putting all my trust in you. And that's what faith is. And I've seen God come through time and time again with the book, with people talking about how much it has encouraged and inspired them. I'm like, man, I can understand why doing what I did was necessary, not just for the book, but for people to understand where I was coming from. And I believe, you know, in my heart that it's where God was coming from as well, that look, we've all fallen short of God's glory. Everyone has done things that are wrong. And if we're going to, like I said before, if we're going to throw stones, we're going to be throwing stones from a glass house. And if we could make a choice, a decision, a conscious decision to love each other the way that God loves us, which is in spite of our sin, in spite of our shortcomings, then we could have real progress. And so, it was just about, God, I trust you. I want this to be, you know, what you want it to be, your way, and I'm just kind of releasing it to you. Like I said, the contract wasn't signed yet. It was coming up in the summer. You know, I knew that I was going to be called names. I knew what it was going to be, but, you know, I decided to do it anyway.
Well, what advice do you have for people who are not courageous?
the advice, And this is so interesting for me to say, because it's like, I'm not coming from a place that's like, I'm this courageous person. It's still a battle for me every day. And I have to continue to put my trust and my identity and find my courage in Christ, because without Christ, I'm not a courageous person. Without having that, you know, his safety net to fall back on, I'm not a courageous person at all. But the advice that I would give is that courage is not the absence of fear. And that's what so many people believe, that if I feel any fear, then I'm not courageous, when that's not the truth. Every single decision that I've made when it came to the vaccine, when it came to standing in the bubble, I was terrified, extremely terrified about what could happen or what would happen. But I did it because I trusted God, and I trusted that and to the point, it's like, you only know God to be trustworthy when you trust him. And so if God is this trustworthy God, the only way that you know him to be trustworthy is if you give him something to trust him in. And so I've learned that God is a trustworthy God. I've learned that I can put my trust in Christ and not fail, because I did it. And so I would just reiterate to people that you don't have to be fearless to be courageous. You feel the fear, but you look to Christ. You don't look at the fear. You look to who is the author and finisher of your faith. And at the end of the day, if you're standing for him, he's going to stand for you. And whether it works out in the natural or not, you have a spiritual home and a spiritual blessing with Christ in heaven.
Well, I can certainly identify strongly with that, because that was what characterized my career as a neurosurgeon. A lot of people said that I was a hot dog because I would do things that nobody else would do, but it wasn't that at all. It was that I would ask God to guide me, to tell me what to do, to show me what to do, when to do it, when not to do it. And over the course of time, he never failed me, so I became very confident in what he could do. And, you know, I would just recommend to people, you know, stop for a moment and just look around you and look at your life. And look at some of the things that have happened, not just bad things, but good things. Maybe there's a reason for that. And maybe there are some amazing things that you could do, particularly when you take the focus off of self. That is really the key to becoming a very successful person. Just stop looking at yourself all the time, me, my, and I, and look at opportunities that you have to positively impact the environment and impact other people's lives, and what an incredible difference it will make, particularly in terms of your happiness. You know, happiness, I can tell you, having grown up in dire poverty and, you know, now, you know, being at a point where I don't have to worry about anything. I can buy anything I want. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want a lot of stuff anymore. I want to have a relationship with God. You know, when you can buy what you want changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really that relationship that makes all the difference. And I just want to ask you, any parting thoughts for our audience?
I would just say that, and you know, this is not me trying to big up the book in any way. I truly do feel that my journey and the journey that I've been on can truly be a light to young adults, to old adults, to people of all different ages and spectrums. And I would encourage everybody to go out and check it out. Read it, read the reviews, read what people are saying, and give the book a chance.
Amen. Well, I want to just thank you not only for being on the program, but for being an incredible example, particularly for young people. I hope a lot of people will be inspired by what you've said here today. I encourage everybody to go out and get this book and read it. It will thrill your soul. It will encourage you. I don't care what age you are. And, thank you for being with us, and we'll be praying for your speedy recovery.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much, Dr. Ben Carson.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And we'll be right back with my closing thoughts and common sense prescription for you. I hope you all enjoyed that time with a phenomenal young man, Jonathan Isaac, both on the basketball court and especially off the basketball court. It's evident that God is using him, and we wish him continued faith and courage as he continues to serve the Lord. And, you know, I'm excited to see him back on the court. He's a tremendous joy to watch that kind of talent. And get that book and make sure you know why you stand and where you stand. And now for a common sense prescription. You know, throughout our nation's history, we've seen a lot of our citizens be put into very difficult positions where they have to choose between what's right and what's wrong, where they have to go with their belief systems or abandon them so that they can be loved, so that they can have peace in their lives. I think about people like Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks. They had difficult decisions to make. They could have taken the easy way out. In the case of Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, they gave their lives. Think about that. But think about the tremendous good that they did for our nation and for other people. Now, I'm not asking you to go out there and give your life necessarily, but I am asking you to think carefully about those things that you can do. Think about what's right and what's wrong, as opposed to what everybody else is doing. And try at some point during this week to consciously make a decision that you know is right, that may not make you popular. See if you have the courage to do that. Because once you start doing it, it becomes a lot easier to continue to do it. Now, our guest today is a celebrity, and that brought his story to light. A lot of us know people like him, or maybe are people like him, but are not celebrities, and our stories are not likely to come to light, but they're just as important. And I'd like you to, if you know of those stories, send them to us. Ben@cornerstone.org. We may read some of those stories on one of our future broadcasts. And that's it for this week. Please subscribe for free, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you don't miss any. Review us. Tell your friends and neighbors and everybody you know, because we need to spread common sense in our country. And until next week, remember the cornerstone principles: faith, liberty, community, and life. See you next week.